This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Announcement before we start class. Everyone should buy this book. It comes like this, or comes in a black hardcover, which is, you know, in case, something happens, a hardcover. Okay? So, this is basically a glossary of every word in the Quran, and you read it word by word, and it gives you the examples. أَأَنذَرْتَهُمْ. The first word is, well, actually, of course, Arabic has three types of word. A fi'l, which is a verb, which is a word that has past, present, and future, or a command. And then you have an ism, which is a word that does not, has meaning, but has no relation to time, which we would call a noun. And then it has a harf. Harf are very important. Huruf are very important. A harf is basically a particle. They call it a particle. So the first one is alif, with a hamza on top, and a fatha, a. And the meaning of it is a particle that asks a question. So if you put a in front of any past tense verb, or any verb at all, past or present, madi mudara, it makes that verb a question. So, shariba, he drank. Ashariba, did he drink? Right? Dhahabtu, or dhahabta, you went. Adhahabta, did you go? Okay. فَبِنِعْمَةِ اللَّهِ, by the blessing of Allah, يَجْحَدُونَ, they reject the blessing of Allah. أَفَبِنِعْمَةِ اللَّهِ يَجْحَدُونَ, is it the blessing of Allah that they reject? This is the first entry of the dictionary, the letter alif with a fatha on top, and it is a particle that you place in front of any verb. Okay? In front of any verb. Or even a noun. For example, you could say, أَمَاءٍ شَرِبْتَ? Did you drink water? Is it water that you drank? Right? أَتَمْرٍ أَكَلْتَ? Is it dates that you ate? Okay? So you learn a lot just reading this one word at a time. And the mashayikh, the best mashayikh of lugha, of language, used to be the Egyptians, but is now the Mauritanians. For example, Al Jazeera in Qatar, all of the guys who check the manuscript, the script before it's put up in front of the broadcaster, they're all Shanakta, Mauritanians. Okay? Mauritania is the British word. Okay? Shanqit is their word. Shanqit, they're called Shanakta. And what do they say? They say that people study grammar where they should be studying vocabulary first. It's vocab. Memorize words first. By memorizing words, all right, the grammar becomes easy. So everyone should take this book and study it one word at a time. Okay? And this is how Malcolm X studied. You want to see it? Sure. You can buy it on Amazon for $7 before you leave the building today. You should have ordered it. $7. Yeah, and you can lose $7. If you have $7 of cash, you probably lose it, okay, before you spend it. So $7, I mean, this is, basically it's for free. Anything $7 today is for free, basically. Okay. This is class number 10, I believe, and although we are scheduled to split the class, we're not splitting the class today into fiqh, because Mufti can't make it today, so we're going to split the class next week. And we're just doing full class of Tasawwuf, Hikam ibn Atta' tonight, today. This is class number 10, I believe. Classes 1 through 8 are on the YouTube. Some of them are in audio, and some are in video. And as you'll see, the video is going to get better with class number 9. MashaAllah, we give thanks to Allah Azza wa Jal. Then the people who made it happen, that we now have a new camera. We're very tech savvy right now. We have a new camera. We have a new little live stream thing. Okay? This class is not live streamed, but everything else is. Okay? So we thank Allah for that. The class, as you're going to see, the video is going to be much better. We have a new sound pack. All this is the fadl of Allah Azza wa Jal. And the tawfiq and the barakah and the dua of the people. Okay? We'll always have coffee. So this is class number 2. We're basically on one chapter a week. If you notice, we're doing one chapter a week. Class numbers 1 through 8 are online. 9 will go online soon, and this is 10. The subject is al-faqr. Before we get to that, 2 weeks ago about, we emailed out a little chart. A little chart that contains five gauges. We need to gauge our ibadah. If we care about something, we gauge it. We measure it. If you ride a bike, there's no gauges, right? There's no gauge on a bike. If you're walking, there are no gauges, of course. If you have a bike, there's just that 1 5-speed bike, right? Or a 10-speed. If you have a car, though, you have how many gauges you have? You got the oil, you got the temperature, you got the RPM, and you got the miles per hour, MPH. Okay, you have more gauges. You have drive, reverse, neutral, right? Overdrive. So you have more gauges. If you have an airplane, how many gauges do you have? It's like you can't even count how many gauges you have. If you have a shuttle up in space, you have a whole room full of gauges, right? So the more serious people take a matter, the more gauges there are, okay? Now think about how serious people are about their finances, okay? How many gauges people have? People who are serious about, of course, if you're like a normal person like most of us, there's one gauge. Is there enough money to get through this month or not? That's like one gauge, basically. One check is coming in, and it's going to 5 different places. That's one gauge. That's it. Okay. But people who are serious about their financial situation, they have a lot of gauges. All right? Their portfolio is diversified. They have a bank account for college, a bank account for retirement, a bank account for monthly expenses, and maybe savings for their vacation and their entertainment or whatever. Okay, and then they have their investment portfolio. Their investment, not investing in one thing. No one invests all their money in one thing. Their investment may be in 7 things. Okay, and then they have revenue streams. All right, they got the job, then they got the house that they rent out, then they got whatever. That is bringing them monthly revenue. Then with all this, you have to have your zakat gauges. You got to know how I'm going to pay zakat on all these different things. How am I going to do that? So you see, the more seriously you take the issue of money and advance in the issue of money, you can have more gauges. But you take someone in the matter of deen, and he doesn't really care, right? He can't even tell you what his gauges are, right? What is his gauges? He doesn't even tell you. Well, yeah, I pray Jum'ah, right? I pray when I can, right? I don't do the haram. He maybe has 3 gauges. You can have the most sophisticated guy, okay? Sophisticated guy, a professional, someone say, oh my gosh, if he walks in, we all have to stop the class and stand up for him, right? But sometimes in matters of deen, he doesn't take it seriously. Ask him, what are your gauges? I pray. Alhamdulillah, I give charity. I pay my zakah. He's done. He's happy. I've met some people like this. I've met people like this, spend on the matter of their dunya, he may have a staff of 20 people. A staff of 200 people in his company. In the matter of his dunya. Ask him the gauges of your religious life. He says, wallahi, if I pray 5 times a day, if I listen to a lecture a week, and I say one witted a night, I'm happy, I'm good. So your gauge of your dunya, asking me to summarize your dunya, your company for me. Oh, bro, that's going to take two weeks for you to understand my company. But I've understood your religious life in 1 sentence, in 2 seconds. So what you care about, you have many gauges, and you monitor many things because you care about it. Ask a regular guy like us, like another example. What do you do to keep healthy? Some people have no gauges. They don't care about it. Okay? Other people, oh, I stop eating at this hour and I do one exercise a day. He has two gauges to stay healthy. But ask the guy who looks like a sculpture, okay? Tell me about, right, your fitness standards. He needs a book to tell you, oh, for I do calves at Tuesday at 3 o'clock, okay? All right? And he's got gauges. He works out. He's got a schedule for muscles you don't know exist, okay? Like the little muscle in the side here, okay? Stuff you don't know exists. He's got a gauge for it. So we're going to start with our spirits, and the awliya have gauges, like it's they got assistance. There was one of the awliya of Egypt, okay? He had a thing about his food. He would not eat anyone's food. It was so serious, he needed his daughter as an assistant to check what he's actually eating. Okay? There are a lot of subtleties in the matter. A lot of subtleties in the matter. Let me give you one subtlety. Your night and your sleep. In the matter of tasawwuf, some people, their sleep is out of whack. And the issue of sleep is related to two things. You can't just tackle sleep. Okay? You can't just tackle sleep. Sleep is related to two things. Your sugar and caffeine intake and your online presence and your screen time. If these two things go late in the day, then and you're worried about sleep, you're going to fail. You set yourself up to fail. So in fact, if you're serious about the issue of sleeping at a regular hour, which is very important for the next gauge, which is Fajr, right? So you see how you have to keep going back. You realize that if you're very serious about Fajr, then you have to be as serious about sleep. If you're going to be serious about sleep, you got to be serious about the issue of sugar, caffeine intake, and screen time, because it's proven that these two things, they need to actually stop way earlier than you have ever imagined if you really want to dominate the subject, the issue of sleeping on time, sleeping at a regular hour, right, and getting good sleep. Because dhikr needs good sleep. You can't be half alert in order to do dhikr. So people are even saying you're going into 5, 6, and 7 o'clock at when you actually need to start your preparations for Fajr. Okay? Your first stop is sleeping on time. So around between the hours of 5 and 7 is when everyone's different, right? You need to actually eliminate and cut down or just close up shop on caffeine, sugar, and screen time. Did you see how serious this matter is? It's not a joke. When you see a wali of Allah Azza wa Jal, and you look at his life, it's very simple. What does he do? He's praying and fasting. Oh, he's so simple. Okay, then why is only like one out of a million people doing it? If it's that easy, it's not that easy. It is not that easy. It's something that looks so simple. So it looks so simple. Like, you take one of a bodybuilder. What's he doing? He's lifting weights. That's all it is. That's it. That's a big deal. And don't eat certain things. In every million. Right? Why are we all failing in this subject if it's that simple? It looks simple. It's not simple. It takes a lot of effort. Right? And there are gauges. There are certain things you didn't even think were things that mattered. But they mattered. You don't ever think that your sugar intake, caffeine, and screen time affect your spirituality. People never imagine it. It's a huge deal. Just like eating bagels for a bodybuilder. You won't find him eating a bagel, right? It's just bread, basically. You're not going to find him eating certain foods. You're like, that's a big deal. Of course it's a big deal. How much water you drink is a big deal. So as we advance and draw near to Allah Azza wa Jal, our war is with our bad habits. It's our war, right? And we are upended. Okay, we are upended by our bad habits. Okay, and just like in bodybuilding, everyone's different and everyone has a different body type. Likewise, you have a different nafs type. Your nafs is different. Some people, the issue of sleep is not a big deal. It's just not a problem. Food is a problem. Others, food is not a problem. Sleep is a problem. So this is where the involvement of the sheikh comes involved, right? Because your body type is different. So your trainer will help you with that. Your nafs is different. So your sheikh will help you with that. Okay? And there are certain things that are common for everyone. All that is a preamble to give us, to alert us to the chart that was emailed out to everyone 2 weeks ago. Raise your hand if you did not get the chart. Okay. If you did not get the chart, put your email here. Okay. Sorry, on the brother's side. If you did not get the chart. This chart is a very simple chart that gauges our Quran, our istighfar, our salah in the masajid, our dhikr, and what was the other one? We said the Quran. Our dhikr. What was the other one? Fikr. Okay. Five simple gauges. Every day there should be register activity on these gauges. And that's why there are three options. We gave a very simple option that if the end of the day came and you didn't do any of these, you have a very simple option to plug in there. Okay? Very simple option. All right? So we should be really, we got to work. This is the real work. The ummah doesn't do this work anymore. Wallahi, the ummah doesn't take spiritual work seriously. This is why we're in the status that we're in. Our ummah does not take spiritual work seriously. And one of the mashayikh of the Chishtiya tariqah, he made a statement and he said, the pride of the murid, okay, are his charts. This is his proof in front of Allah Azza wa Jal. His charts, okay? Your charts. Where are your charts? This sheikh, you say, where are your charts? You should have piles of paper, right? Where keeping your charts, your log. When did I do wrong? When did I do certain actions, okay? You should have piles of this. Just like, I mean, the workout guys, they got books. There was a monthly magazine I saw the other day for abs. How much can you talk about the subject? What is there to say, right? Because I don't know. I don't have knowledge. So they might have a whole issue on, I don't know, the side parts or rice or something or foods. Who knows, right? They have a lot to say. And I'm thinking, subhanAllah, a whole magazine on abs, okay? Different exercises, different things. Because if you care about something, you will develop a lot of information on it. And it develops into a whole institution. Not so different from the NBA. What is it? What's going on? Two people competing on putting the ball in the hoop. So simple. But no, if you keep focusing on it, it develops, okay? Into a huge industry. Sorry, an industry, I should say, not an institution, an industry. So now we're on the subject of poverty. Poverty. The poverty that we're talking about here is any need, normal need, or a dependency, or a desired matter that is not fulfilled or met. Okay? This is what poverty is. Lest you have a shallow view of poverty, that it is merely the poverty of wealth. However, the poverty from wealth is not to be dismissed either. Okay? The poverty from wealth, okay? The poverty from wealth is the fastest route, is the left lane of poverty. Okay? So, you have many lanes. There are many types of poverty. So let's say Allah bless you with wealth. My husband's rich. What am I supposed to do so I can have poverty? Ask him to become a farmer or a plumber? No. There are other types of poverty that can get you to where our desired goal is. But the poverty of wealth is the left lane. People in the left lane, they're going to get there faster than you. Okay, but you can also get there. Does it mean the middle and the right and the middle lanes won't get there? So this is a very important thing when we talk about faqat. Actually, the translation of faqa to poverty is not even correct. A faqa is a lack, a diminishment in something that we need. What are the things that we need? They are outlined in the Quran. Surah Quraysh outlines the two major needs that if they're fulfilled, you shouldn't really complain. Okay? What are they? right? الذي أطعمهم من جوع وآمنهم من خوف. He satiated them from hunger and he secured them from fear. So having food and security are two of the fundamental needs. Because everything here is going to come from the Quran. Watch. What is the next two above these fundamental needs? Okay, so your food, you got food in your stomach guaranteed every day. And you got a house to live in. Are you done? No. No, you're not done. You're surviving. That's it. What other things that people need? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Al-malu wal-banun, zinatul hayat al-dunya. Now, you have life. Food and security equals life. Now you need a good life. Allah defines it as wealth and children. Okay? Wealth and children. Okay? Then, in Surah Al-Kahf, you get something on top of that. So what does wealth do? Wealth makes me relaxed. It makes me have a nicer house. You don't want to have just like a little dingy apartment. You want to have a nice house, right? With room. Prophet ﷺ said, if Allah gives you wealth, make your living space for your family vast. This is very important. Some people think that we're not supposed to spend on having a big home. Well, it's actually the sunnah. Why? If you have a small house and you have many kids, okay, you're going to be upset eventually that there's no space, there's no... So where is your kid going to go? He's going to leave the house to get some peace of mind. So Allah, Azza wa, the Prophet ﷺ said, if Allah gives you money, make your house big. Why? It will protect your family. Then he doesn't need to leave the house to get his objective. He doesn't need to leave the house to get away from his sister. He doesn't need to leave the house to get some peace and quiet. Right? His house is big enough for you to be over there and me to be over here and we can live happily. Right? So in fact, having a bigger house, it keeps the family together. But at the same time, there are some other issues with the big house, but this is not the point of it. Al-mal wal-banun zinatul hayatid dunya. So next we go to a third tier, which we come in Surah Al-Kahf. Okay? Allah Azza wa Jal tells us about two men. Okay? One was poor and one was rich. How does Allah describe the rich man? He describes the rich man as looking down on the other farmer by saying, I have more friends and more streams. Okay? That means his farm brings more crops and I have more friends, more kids. Right? وَأَعَزُّ نَفَرًا I have more friends than you. So what's the third layer? The third layer is not just one revenue stream, a second and a third and a fourth revenue stream. Now you're making a lot more every month. So more revenue, it's a big difference between revenue streams and wealth. Right? Income and wealth is totally different. Right? I mean, you inherit $100,000. What is a smart thing to do? Okay, take 10,000 for yourself now, use 90 to produce another monthly revenue stream for yourself. There's a big difference between income and wealth. So now he has more revenue streams coming in, and أَعَزُّ نَفَرًا I have more friends than you. أَنَا أَكْثَرُ مِنْكَ مَالًا وَأَعَزُّ وَلَدًا Right? I have not only more friends, more influential friends. So what are we outlining here? So we don't get distracted. We're outlining, if poverty is the lack of things, the Quran, Allah is telling us what makes a human being happy and lofty and glorious. Because poverty will be the removal of these things. Okay? So the third street level of a great life now, you went from life, good life, great life, is that I have more revenue coming in from many places and I have more friends who are also influential. This is the highest level you're going to get to. Okay? Multiple revenue streams and many influential friends. Now, you're like a king. You're like a king. You're walking around. No one. You're untouchable. The way you walk, you can tell that this person is a certain way. Just walking, the way you walk. Okay? Now, when Allah Azza wa Jal wishes to draw some, to push someone away from Him, what does He do? He fills the meter of all of these things to the top. This person will never have problems in life, and therefore, okay, they will never turn to Allah. But if Allah Azza wa Jal wants you to turn to Him, what will He do? He will begin removing something from one of these. So that if Allah wants you to do a job in this world, let's say Allah Azza wa Jal has put you in a position, strong position. He wants you to have certain things. He wants you to do a certain job. How can you do a job when you're hungry? Right? How can you do a job when you're hungry? How can you do a job when you're thinking about, where's my next paycheck coming from? Okay? But how does Allah still get to you? He can still get to you on your knees by going to the next levels up. Okay? The next level up. Which we said, zinatul hayatul dunya, al-mal wal-banoon. Problem with your kids. Problem with your home or your car, it's ugly. Because I don't have enough money to fix it or clean it or paint the house. Okay? And if Allah wills that you have those, you can go up to the next one. Problem with influential people. Yes, you have wealth, you have beautiful kids, a beautiful home, but influential people now are against you. This is a problem. This puts you on your knees, right? Or what is the other one said? Multiple revenue streams, right? So now, yes, you have, but you don't have that much, okay? You only have, you're barely, okay? So when we look at poverty and we look at the word faqat, you got to know that Allah Azza wa Jal can get us in any of these. And when trials come in any of these, all right, it should be an impetus for us to get on our knees and draw nearer to Allah, because we will find solace in the ibadah, in the dhikr. You find solace in obeying Allah and in advancing in worship. Okay? In advancing in worship, you will find solace that will cure your heart from the pains of when Allah Azza wa Jal removes, or when, we shouldn't attribute that to Allah, or when these things are removed from our lives. Okay? This is the equation. Remove from the human being one of these six things, okay? And he will have pain in his heart. The only thing that will fill this void is turning back to Allah. Okay? The fastest route, we said, is the lower you go, the faster the route. So, food and security. وُرُودُ الْفَاقَاتِ أَعْيَادُ الْمُرِيدِينَ. You see now how tasawwuf teaches us, the Quran teaches us really, what is happiness and greatness of life, and what is the impact of the removal. So he says here, وُرُودُ الْفَاقَاتِ أَعْيَادُ الْمُرِيدِينَ. When the state of need arrives, this is the feast. This is the celebration of the murids, the seekers of Allah. Okay? This is celebration. Why is that? You should feel honored. You should feel honored. When you buy yourself, we gave this example. If you buy yourself, run as fast as you can. You're going to run at a certain speed, okay? But if a German shepherd is running behind you to eat you, you are going to run at a faster speed, right? It'll be faster, okay? And you won't even know you're doing it. This is the beauty of it. You want to run and test yourself? Run, okay? You're thinking about it, you're conscious of it, and you're not going to be as fast. But if there's a cheetah behind you or a German shepherd, you're going to be moving. And the beauty of it, you're faster and you're not conscious of it. Remember what we said about worship before that. Great worship is ruined by what? Being conscious of it, right? When you witness yourself doing worship, you're ruining your worship, right? When you witness even Sheikh Abdurrahman al-Shaghuri of Syria, Qaddasallahu sirrahu, he passed away before all the calamity of Syria began, so much so that people noticed it. And they said, it may have been that Allah was preserving Syria just for him, as Allah does not want him to see harm. So he waited until he died, then all the calamity came upon Syria. Allah knows best, but some of the people say that, right? Abdurrahman al-Shaghuri was asked, what is the value of reading Ibn Arabi? People always talk badly of Ibn Arabi, and even the mashayikh say, don't read Ibn Arabi, you'll be confused. But Sheikh Abdurrahman al-Shaghuri was very keen on reading Ibn Arabi, teaching Ibn Arabi, and quoting Ibn Arabi. So they said to him, why do you do this? When even the other sheikhs of tariqah, they all say, don't read Ibn Arabi, you'll be confused, because in it is things that confuse you. So he said, number one, I'll tell you why it's confusing. It will be confusing because some of the terminologies he uses may be terminology of that time, which is no longer in use, or it's his own terminology, which we don't know. So if we don't know what the term means, we get confused. That's number one. Number two, people cite a sentence of Ibn Arabi, they don't give you what's before and what's after. So that's why it looks like the same, but something confusing or wrong. But I insist on teaching Ibn Arabi because when a wali of Allah Azza wa Jal is attacked and you defend him, right, your rank increases. Right? This is what dhikrullah fil ghafilin is a special dhikr. There's a special dhikr that has greater weight than other dhikr. Like what? Dhikrullah fil ghafilin. If you prayed right now dhuhr, four sunnahs, then dhuhr, then the tasbih, then two sunnahs. How many rak'ahs? Okay, 10 rak'ahs plus tasbih. Great. But if you were forced to go to some wedding of heedlessness and ghafla, and all these weddings are all problematic now, and all your family's talking rubbish, and everyone's talking rubbish, and you're just there because you have to be there and you're going to leave soon anyway, because we should. The sunnah of these wedding invitations, if you have to go for family purposes, you go, you show your face, and you smile at everyone, show them your teeth as well, then as soon as the fawahish come, you go. You leave. And even if they say, oh, if I leave, they're going to go crazy. Fine, go to the bathroom. Right? Go to the bathroom. Go take a walk outside. Go get something from your car. All right? Keep yourself busy somehow. But don't go into that hall with all this fahshat. Your children are watching you. Okay? Your children are watching you. If you don't fear Allah, fear the influence of this on your children. Your children see you doing that, you've just negated everything else that you do in your life. Because they see you, oh, yeah, all this is talk. All the deen is talk. Because when a push comes to shove, and you have to be there, you're there like everyone else. You're acting like a fasiq like everyone else. No sacrifice. Okay? So when you're there, and you steal away, and you find a place to pray salah of Maghrib, okay? This salah is more valuable in the sight of Allah than another salah. Even if all you're able to do is three rak'ahs, and you can't even focus because it's so loud, but in the sight of Allah, this is greater, because the effort to do it was greater. Okay? The effort to do it was greater. So, the dhikr of Allah fil ghafilin. Dhikrullah fil ghafilin. So, we were saying here, I sort of lost track where we got to, So when a wali is attacked, the defender of that wali immediately is elevated, no matter what happens, no matter who he is. Let's take examples. The Prophet ﷺ. Who are the greatest of Sahaba? Who are the greatest Sahaba? The first ones, when the Prophet was attacked. Yani Ammar bin Yasir, is his worship greater than any other person's worship? No, we can tell you that there are people of the second and the third and the fourth generation whose worship is more than Ammar bin Yasir. The knowledge of Ammar bin Yasir, is it greater? I can tell you that Abu Hanifa has wrote more and said more than Ammar bin Yasir. The service of Ammar bin Yasir, we can tell you Amr ibn al-As and Khalid bin Walid did greater service to the Ummah than Ammar bin Yasir. But when we list the Sahaba, who is at the top? Ammar bin Yasir. He's greater than all these people. Why is that? Why is his mother Sumayyah and his father Yasir above all of the other Sahaba that we mentioned, Khalid bin Walid? He's above all of these people. Okay, why is that? Because they came to the defense of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam when the Prophet was being attacked. Okay, the Prophet was being attacked. So when a Prophet or a Wali is being attacked, this is the fastest route to a permanent maqam with that Wali, and therefore with Allah Azza wa Jal. Okay, when he's under attack, this is the greatest level. Okay, when you're his supporters. So Sheikh Abdul Rahman al-Shaghuri said, I insist on Ibn Arabi because he's attacked. So I want to give him victory. Okay, today, just to give you information, the wali that is under attack that you must give victory to is Hassan al-Banna. He is a wali. He is arif billah. He has karamat. He has people testifying to his wilayah. Okay. He has all this. His followers were Prophet Isa bin Maryam. They messed up the doctrine really fast, didn't they? Prophet Musa, in his own life, they were messing it up, right? In his own life. So it should not come as a surprise to you that when a wali of Allah, who is less than a messenger or a prophet, his followers go awry, right? Mess up his mission, message, and misrepresent him. Is Moses represented properly? Is Jesus represented properly? So no one should say, well, look at his followers. You can't call him a wali, look at his followers. Why did he fix them? A wali is not judged by his followers, right? So his followers in his lifetime were already doing wrong things that he disapproved of, okay? So Hassan al-Banna is one of these people that you can feast on having a place with him on you. How do you know he might not be your intercessor on Yawm al-Qiyamah? You'll be in trouble, but you did him a favor in front of everyone when everyone else is cursing him. Oh, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, it's Hassan al-Banna, it's Abdul Wahhab, Hassan al-Banna, Sayyid Qutb, Bin Laden, ISIS. That's the chain of transmission that the kuffar have made, right? Okay, right? So we say, okay, you have to defend him. He should be defended. This is the smart one. Defends him, you go straight up with him, okay? Second thing, the whole point of what we got to this is why Sheikh Abdul Rahman al-Shaghuri is protecting Ibn Arabi and teaching him. And he said, the second reason I teach Ibn Arabi, okay, is that Ibn Arabi says, if you are praying and you witness yourself praying and you realize that other people are watching you pray, then make the intention that your prayer is an encouragement to them to pray, and make the intention that when people see others praying, they get inspired, and make the intention that the youth see you, the shabab, see you praying, therefore they'll take an example from you, right? Therefore you have converted something which was possibly showing off into being a good deed. And he said, where other book will you find this knowledge? What other book has this knowledge other than the books of Ibn Arabi? Who else goes that deep into a matter and gives you a problem that is actually a solution to a problem that is actually happening all the time, right? I never used to read Quran, now I'm reading Quran, but now I realize everyone's looking at me while I'm reading Quran. So my ibadah becomes riyah, showing off. Ibn Arabi gave you the solution and the medicine. He said, make your intention that you're an example for others, okay? Make the intention that yes, if they do see you, let them see you, okay? Hopefully they will also improve and think to themselves to do so. And this is one of the secrets, you only find this in the books of the Ahl al-Tasawwuf. One of the secrets of praying in jama'ah, you will not see many people give you the reason why. Prophet ﷺ says, salah in jama'ah is 27 times better than any other salah. Another hadith, 25 times better than prayer at home. Okay? So some of the ulama and the awliya say, well, it's because so that you could say salam to people, you get more reward. There's another hidden reason. The more you go and pray in jama'ah, you expose yourself to seeing, to witnessing other people who are praying better than you, who are dressed better than you, who are cautious in religion more than you, right? Who are doing more than you, and over time, you start emulating them, okay? You start emulating them, okay? And there was a man in Morocco, and they said to him, so-and-so never prays in the masjid. He will never pray in a masjid. He doesn't even pray, okay? And I challenge, there were some imams, sheikhs talking amongst each other, said, I challenge anyone to get him in the masjid, to pray, start praying in the masjid. So one sheikh took up the challenge and he failed. He said, it didn't work. Another sheikh took up the challenge, okay? So he said, I got him praying in the masjid. So they said, okay, let's all go. So they went up to the mountain. This is a famous chief. He's the chief of the tribe in Morocco, in the mountains. And he refused to pray in the masjid. They said, if we can get him to pray in the masjid, the whole tribe will pray in the masjid, right? That's how tribal systems work. So he came down and said, I got him praying in the masjid. So they said, okay, let's go look. They got up there. They saw, they said, where's so-and-so? He's in the bathroom, okay? He's in the outhouse. They're waited for him. The guy came out of the outhouse. Back then, you had the outhouse was one place. They didn't have faucets in the outhouse. Okay? The adhan went off. He went from the outhouse to the masjid. He didn't take his boots off. He walked with his boots into the masjid, onto the straw mats. And he stood in the line for the prayer. He salamed out and he walked out. Okay? They said, hold on. He never made wudu. And he's praying with his boots on. He said to them, look, you guys said let's get him in the masjid. I got him in the masjid. You guys work on the wudu. Okay? You get him to make wudu and take his boots off. But he's smart. You're going to come in the masjid. Like many bad people, they start coming to the masjid. Just being here in a good masjid, okay, in any masjid that has righteous people and scholarship and knowledge, you'll fix yourself. Just by default, you'll fix yourself. Okay? Like anyone who gets involved in any industry, just get your foot in the door. Everything else will work its way itself out. So you'll start, he's eventually going to make wudu. Someone's going to tell him. He's going to see everyone else doing it. Okay? He's going to take his boots off eventually. So just get in the door. Okay? So this is the wisdom of these people, how they took things one step at a time. So this is why Ibn Arabi is read. This is Sheikh Abdul Rahman al-Shahuri telling us that when we increase, again we go back to what we were saying originally. Being conscious of yourself is very likely to occur when you're doing ibadah from yourself. When you're doing ibadah from yourself. But when you're doing ibadah fleeing from pain caused by loss, you're so busy focusing on curing this pain in your chest that you won't even be conscious of yourself. Okay, you won't even realize you are doing so much. And we've all seen it. We've all seen amazing people go on Hajj, right? His whole mind is thinking of the drama that he's in, the tribulation that he's in, okay? He doesn't realize he's being honored right now, that Allah's elevating him right now. The awliya will be congratulating him. Because again, when you do draw near to Allah because of a tribulation, your ibadah is faster, stronger, and you're not conscious of yourself. Whereas if you're doing it from yourself, it's never going to be as strong. You're going to stop when you feel like stopping, okay? You're going to stop when you feel like you're exhausted, and you'll be conscious of yourself. Our teacher said, is the difference between freshly squeezing an orange and drinking the juice and getting orange drink, all right? Or like one of these Sun Up or whatever, this Sunny D, which is orange drink, flavored orange juice, versus the real thing. So the real thing comes to you when trial comes to you, tribulation. And we outlined for those who came late, the six things in the Quran that make life, good life, great life. What makes life, all right? Enough food to live and cover over a roof over your head. Surah Quraysh. Surah An-Nisa, what's a good life? Right? Al-mal wal-banun. More money and kids. If you have kids, okay? If you have good kids, you'll see that this is a big, big gift from Allah Azza wa Jalla. Especially someone, he has bints. If you have bints, Even in a dream, Ibn Sirin says, to see a girl in a dream means rahmah. Girls, if you see having a daughter in a dream, if you have a daughter, this is a sign of rahmah. Because girls, they love their dad. They show affection to their dad, right? And their mom. And you realize, subhanAllah, it wiped away all my upsetness. I was upset about things, I even forgot about it. Even kids, when they're no good, they're a ni'mah for you. Like, a girl is a blessing. Not when she vomits at 2 a.m. is not a blessing, right? No, it is a blessing. It keeps you too busy to be upset about other things. You will forget about being upset about certain things. If so-and-so upset you at the job, when you come home and your kid has 2 hours of homework, you got to do it with him, you forget about the job, right? They keep you too busy to think of your grief. Kids are a big ni'mah. Of course, if you don't raise them well, they become a niqmah, okay? And become a tribulation for you, okay? So, the next level of good life is al-mal wal-banun. Now, what makes a great life? The man of Surah Al-Kahf, he said, I have more rivers and I have more friends, right? That means I have multiple ways of getting income, multiple income sources, not just one, multiple income revenue sources, plus many influential friends. أَعَزُّ نَفَرًا. I have more glorious and more powerful friends. Okay? More powerful friends. So, if you have powerful friends, how is Allah going to test you? Right? They get upset at you. Right? Or you have powerful enemies. Right? They scare you. Okay? So this is it. ورود الفاقات أعياد المريدين. You got to understand where this is coming from. When health is lost, don't... The murid and the intelligent Sufi does not look at the nature of the test and try to get rid of it, but look at the reason Allah is testing you is to draw you back. Okay? Let's look at the next hikmah. We're going to finish this chapter, inshallah, today. رُبَّمَا وَجَدْتَ مِنَ الْمَزِيدِ فِي الْفَاقَاتِ مَا لَا تَجِدُهُ فِي الصَّوْمِ وَالصَّلَاةِ. This is very obvious. Sometimes you will find more benefit in your states of need than you find in your fasting and your prayer. You spent a summer exerting yourself fasting and praying. And the next summer, وَالْعَيَاذُ بِاللَّهِ يَعْنِي Allah protect us, حَفِظَنَ اللَّهِ, your wife gets cancer. In which summer are you closer to Allah? Right? When your family member gets cancer, you're on your knees every day without realizing it. And you worship without a schedule. You will notice you do not do ibadah with a schedule. Right? Like we said earlier, an Olympic racer, he's going to practice from 9 to 5. But if there's a dog behind him, he's running now. Not a schedule. Right? I was talking to a brother the other day. His wife got cancer and died some 2 years back. He said, that changed my life. Because I would feel the pain in my chest so badly that I would race to the nearest Muslim I saw and ask him his dua. Yani, behavior, that's crazy. No one would behave like this. But when you're in pain, you behave like this, right? You behave like this. I would race, okay, to the nearest quiet spot and read it from the prayer book. Read from the prayer book. Just pick it up and reading. This is not something that you would ever schedule to do. Okay? From so much pain he had in his chest, whatever money he had, he'd give as sadaqah. Okay? Anything. He would give anything as sadaqah. So he was doing so much, but his mind was on the tribulation, which actually protected him from ever realizing how much he's doing. Right? Realize how much he's doing. And that changed his life. Okay, now he's in charge of one of the huge masajid in America. He's in charge. Allah gave him a job. When you do well, Allah gives you a job. Okay? When you prove yourself, Allah gives you a job. Okay? Allah gives you a job. And one of the signs that Allah gives you a job is that He establishes you in that job. All right? He makes you fit for that job and without any effort. Okay? So this is why he says, you will find in tribulation spiritual advancement that you don't find in your own worship. Okay? However, though, there's a trick. You can't just sit around waiting for me to be tested. Let me wait until Allah tests me. Then I'll advance. No. Allah purifies the people of taqwa that you were trying beforehand. Then Allah tried. Like, you can't wait until when the playoff comes, we'll go for the championship. You got to make the playoffs first. You got to make the playoffs, right? So the regular season is peacetime. It's the regular season. You got to make the playoffs, right? إِنَّمَا يَمْتَحِنَ اللَّهُ قُلُوبَهُمْ لِلتَّقْوَى. Allah purifies the hearts of the pious. That means in peacetime, when everything is good, you're working. You're trying to eliminate haram. You're trying to do better. Then Allah chooses you and He tests you. When Allah chose Moses, when did Allah choose Moses and how? How and when? Prophet Musa alayhi salam, he's a prince, doesn't know his identity. He learned that he's a Hebrew. How did he react when he learned he was a Hebrew? He began sympathizing with them, doing good towards them. He began trying to tell the people, stop whipping them, right? Eased up the work on them. Then he began visiting them. Late at night, he would go into the Hebrew camps and visit with the Hebrews, right? And he met them and he started talking to them. And they're wondering, why is this prince of Egypt coming to talk to us, right? And then he learned he was a Hebrew, okay? Then when his goodness towards them became so good in the sight of Allah, then Allah chose him. How did Allah choose him? This is a Hebrew prince. You're not going to be perfect. He has things in him Allah wants to remove from him. Okay? How? Allah caused him to kill a man and then caused him to be indicted for murder and then forced him to flee. Okay? Forced him to flee. So when Allah chose Moses, it wasn't a cake didn't come down from heaven. A tribulation came down from heaven. A very serious trial came down from heaven. Allah says that this is one of the most serious trials that anyone ever had. Imagine, you're a politician and you're indicted for murder. You got to flee for your life, right? Or you're a prince. Then, the choosing is not over yet. When he arrived in the Arabian desert, he didn't get the revelation from Allah and the job of being a prophet. No. What happened? 10 years of being a shepherd. Why? Because all of your old habits have to go away. Your old life has to be forgotten. So he's being with what? With the goats and the sheep, herding them. That's it. All of that old life has to be forgotten. You have to clean the water. Then after 10 years, he got the revelation. Okay. Al-faqatu busutul mawahib. Okay. So again, link into the story of Musa alayhi salam. The tribulation, when it comes, you don't realize it. The beginning is a trial. The end is a gift and a job. Of course, the greatest gift that Allah can give anyone is what? A job. We're not talking about a 9-to-5 job. We're talking about what is your job in the ummah. Okay? What is your job in the ummah? That you can say that, you know, from what you do, from what Allah allowed you to do, the ummah is better than it was before. Okay? That's what you got. The ummah is better than it was before. Okay? And that could be, the muttaqeen, they have jobs. Allah Azza wa Jalla put him, even if he's a professional in the day, but in his volunteer time, he has a job. Okay? This is the greatest gift Allah can give someone. It begins with a trial, it ends with a job. Okay? And by the way, jobs are not all overt. There are some secret jobs. Okay? Marabt al-Hajj, Sheikh Mabikr al-Sudani, he taught us about that the workers of Allah are two types. Overt and covert. Outwardly manifest and hidden. Okay, they're hidden awliya. He said there are some awliya, they have jobs, you don't see the job. You think he's just doing nothing. He's doing a job for Allah Azza wa Jal, but you don't see it. Okay? And it's not with his hands, or with his mouth, or with his body. Okay? So there's, just so that we don't think that it's all manifest. But for most people like us, it's manifest. Okay? The trial comes like Musa. The trial leads to two phases. The trial leads to two phases. After you pass the test, it leads to the phase of takhliya and the phase of tahliya. Takhliya, to remove all of the impurities that are incoming into the heart. Just removing these impurities. Okay? So you'll find that the person, he wants to remove impurities. Okay? Musa alayhi salam, as Abdul Qadir al-Jailani teaches us in one of his books, he says Musa spent 8 or 10 years, and it was actually 10 years, in the desert with the animals. Why? To remove all of the memories of Egypt. And that he is not seeing haram anymore. He's not seeing what he used to see in the past. He's just removing all those memories. Okay? Then, what happened next? After he left, he saw the burning bush and he began getting revelation. Then Allah Azza wa Jal began for him after he his finished his time as a shepherd was over. Okay? Now he left with his two wives. He had two wives. He married both of the daughters of Shu'aib. And Allah Azza wa Jal began educating him. He began educating him. First, he said, throw your stick. Okay? Throw your stick. Then he taught, he said to him, I'm your Lord. Remove your sandals. Then throw the stick. Allah taught him directly about himself and about the nature of cause and effect. The nature of cause and effect. Why? Because he is going to do something not fathomable. How can one man upend an entire empire? Think about this. How can one man upend an entire civilization? That man knows the true causes of things. So Allah Azza wa Jalla taught him, you think it's a staff? It is what Allah decides it to be. This is the true cause and effect of a believer. You see a staff? You think it's a staff? Oh Moses, what is it? You think Allah doesn't know? No, Allah is bringing out from Moses what he imagines it to be. It's my stick. It's my I lean on it. I move the cattle. And I have other uses. Miscellaneous usages. Okay? Allah told him, that's what you think. That's not the reality. What you think is not the reality. Okay? The murid will come to a point and realize everything he thought is actually not the case. Everything is different. It's a whole new reality. Throw it. It became a serpent. Okay? Your hand. Okay? Your hand. What's in your pocket? Moses, nothing's in your pocket. Okay? Stick your hand in your pocket. Take it out. And his hand came out glowing white. Okay? Then put it back in and it came back normal. Everything you think is actually not the way it is. Allah Azza wa Jal will take you to that level. Now you understand something. You will understand what you need for the job. Whatever job Allah says about وَاصْطَنَعْتُكَ عَلَىٰ عَيْنِي I fashioned you, myself, every step for this job. You are created for this job. So the murid, when he does, he passes his test, and he does takhliya, Allah Azza wa Jal will begin educating him on something for the job that he will do. Okay? For the job that he will do. And it may be so simple. There was one time a woman, and this is very important, a woman came to her sheikh after her sheikh was talking about a subject like this, that when Allah Azza wa Jal uses you, or when you come near to him, he uses you for a job. Okay? She said, Sheikh, I've been striving for years, but Allah has never given me a job. I'm just like everyone else. Allah has not given me a job. I just do what every other woman does. There's nothing unique about me. The Sheikh said, go away from me. You are so ignorant. Okay? And he laughed. And she doesn't know what kind of answer this is. Right? He laughed. He said, get her, go away. And she came back. She says, Sheikh, you're making a fun because you think I'm some small person, okay? Some small person that is not worth anything to you in your eyes. He laughed even harder. He said, go away. Okay? Now years passed, and then what happened? Years passed. And the woman passed on. She died. She died. And the sheikh died. Then they met in the barzakh. And the sheikh said, let me show you something. She walked and she said, sheikh, oh, you're, mashallah, alhamdulillah, we made it to Jannah, but your promises were wrong. I never did a job for Allah Azza wa Jalla. He said, now I'll show you. And he peeked open the life of this dunya. And he said, look. And she saw a huge multitude of gathering. She said, mashallah, big gathering. Which masjid is that? He said, look at the imam. And she looked, and it was her son. He said, you think you didn't have a job? And I knew this all along. Right? And I knew this all along, and I didn't want to bring it to your attention so that you can act naturally with your son. Allah wants her to be natural. If he says, oh, you're going to raise a great son, now she's going to like shake, right? She's not going to know what to do. You can't think, he wants us to be natural, right? So he wouldn't tell her what her job was. And sometimes, this is it. Sometimes you're doing your job, it's not explicit. You don't know what your job is, you're already doing it. That's why he laughed. So you're already doing it and you don't know. That's why he said you're ignorant, right? But this is an ignorance that's needed. An ignorance that's needed. So you could do your job without realizing it. So you could do it naturally, okay? Do it naturally. May Allah Azza wa Jal all use us. And Ibn Atta also says there's other ibad of Allah Azza wa Jal are of different types. Are of different types. Okay? He said they are of one abd that Allah uses but He does not love. And then one abd Allah loves but doesn't use. And then there is one abd Allah uses and loves. Be from the one He uses and loves. So who is the abd that He uses but doesn't love? The corrupt jurist. The corrupt faqih. The corrupt faqih. Okay? So what is the corrupt faqih? The Prophet ﷺ tells, there is a man, a mu'allim, who all of his students go to Jannah. And they find that their sheikh is not in Jannah. So they all go out looking for their sheikh. Then they find him being dragged to hell. And they say, oh Allah, this is our sheikh. We're only in Jannah because of his teaching. After the tawfiq of Allah is the work of the sheikh. He said yes. He taught you, but he didn't act upon it. He goes to hell. Prophet ﷺ said, "Inna Allah la yu'ayyidu hadha ad-dini bir-rajul al-fajir." Allah will help this religion through a corrupt man. Many corrupt men have done great services to the religion. Okay, many corrupt people have done good things for the religion. India would not have entered Islam as fast as it did. Sindh, which is north, okay. Hajjaj, son of Yusuf, Hajjaj bin Yusuf, he's the one who wanted India. Why? Because they were taxing his men on the way. They were taxing the merchants on the way. And he wanted to tax the merchants, but he didn't want to double tax the merchants. So India was causing a problem for him. He went in there solely to clear the silk route between the Arab lands and China. That's all he wanted to do. To clear the silk route. But his soldiers went there knowing this is jihad fi sabilillah and da'wah. Right? Muhammad bin Qasim al-Qurashi, okay? He went there, he was a salih, upright man, and he used this opportunity for da'wah. And they converted many people. They conquered the land. They moved the Hindu priests aside and the Buddhist priests, and they established Islam there. Many people entered Islam afterwards. On top of that, because Hajjaj bin Yusuf cleared the silk route for the Muslims, what flowed in to the Muslim lands and became very cheap? Paper. An invention that came about. So who benefited the Ummah for this? Hajjaj bin Yusuf. Does he get the reward for it? Prophet ﷺ said, you get the reward for what you intended. If you intended tax-free route, you got a tax-free route, right? But the Muslims benefited. And this is why from the time of Hajjaj bin Yusuf, after he clears the silk route for the Muslims, or whatever the route is called, for the Muslims between Iraq and China, you find an explosion of hadith publications. You find Muwatta, Musnad Ahmad, Bukhari, Muslim, Tirmidhi, Bayha, they come in one century. Why? The influx of paper allowed for many people to start writing. Everyone was writing. Before that, you needed a scroll. And the scroll doesn't last. If it gets hot or it gets wet, you lose it. So you see this one man, Hajjaj bin Yusuf, did something for dunya. But who benefits? The whole ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The whole ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So this is someone Allah used, but does not love. Someone says, how can you say Allah does not love him? We can. When you kill sahaba and tabi'een, right? This is not a sign that Allah loves you. If Allah loves you, right? وَمَنْ يُرِدِ اللَّهُ بِهِ خَيْرًا يَشْرَحْ صَدْرَهُ لِلْإِسْلَامِ يُفَقِّهُ فِي الدِّينِ. He makes him a faqih in deen, knowledge of deen. And Allah also says, يَشْرَحْ صَدْرَهُ لِلْإِسْلَامِ. He makes his heart open to Islam. What does that mean? Just loving it or acting upon it? Acting upon it. Killing tabi'een and sahaba who are hanging on the curtain of the Kaaba is not an act of deen. So we could say, yes, he's someone Allah used but did not love. May Allah forgive him and may Allah forgive him. Oh, of course, Allah can forgive anyone on Yawm al-Qiyamah. He had some goodness in him, but he was not from the people we say Allah loves, because then his actions would be an example. Someone Allah uses and loves, the righteous scholar, the righteous, anyone righteous who does good works. Now, what is the sign that someone uses and loves? He benefits the ummah, but he also is an example, spiritual example. Imam al-Haddad said, how do you know of the scholar who is someone Allah loves, what we call ulama al-amilin, the scholars who act? His scholarship and his work does not take away from his ibadah. Okay? He does not sacrifice his ibadah, his own nearness to Allah, for his work for the ummah. And he said, Imam al-Haddad says, anyone who claims to be working for the ummah by sacrificing his own worship is munafiq. There was someone who says, we sacrificed our sunnah prayers, right, to do such and such. Imam al-Haddad said, this man is the most ignorant of the ignorant. You don't sacrifice your own ibadah for other people, right? You don't sacrifice it for others. You do both. Umar bin Khattab, he says, daytime is for the ibad. Daytime, I will serve the Muslims all day. Nighttime, for Allah. Abu Bakr as-Siddiq, when he gave his khutbah, he said, there are some actions, Allah accepts it by day, doesn't accept it by night. And some actions, accepted by night, not accepted by day. What did he mean? Service is for the daytime, ibadah is for the evening time. Okay? So this is the sign. And then who is those who Allah loves but doesn't use? They are those who, they're close to Allah, but they are not involved in any way, shape, and form in the da'wah or in the khidmah of the Muslims. Right? So, if you fail, let yourself just be one of those. You have a question back there? Complete jahil. The question is, what about someone who willfully does bad today, seeing and believing that I'm going to use that bad to do good? It's complete jahil. Because you want to do good. Who's going to give you the tawfiq to do good? Who's going to give you the blessings to do good? Is it from yourself? Then you're already jahil. No, it's from Allah. If it's from Allah, do it the way Allah wants it to be done. Right? Then you will do good. You might not do the good that you expected to do, but you'll do some good. Many people in da'wah, Ibn Taymiyyah said, actually, that Ahlul Bid'ah, right? The people of Bid'ah, who want to think that they're doing good, they end up with more followers than Ahlul Haqq, right? Because the people of Bid'ah, they are willing to break the rules in the name of da'wah, right? In the name of da'wah. So this is like back in his time, he's talking about a lot of new Muslims. And they're all from Mongolia, right? Far out. The Mongols are in Ibn Taymiyyah's time surrounded with Mongols. These Mongols are Muslim, semi-Muslim. They don't know what they are, mixing everything up. So many of the dua were saying, let us take from their religion, the image of their religion, and put it in Islam. Okay? Whatever their religion practices were, and bring it in Islam. And mix the two so that he thinks this, oh, it's a continuation of my own religion. And he starts doing it. Who did this before him? Paul. In Christianity. Paul, Roman citizen, he said, let us take the Roman religion, okay, the skeleton of the Roman religion, and just infuse it with Christian beliefs. Okay, and that's what Roman religion is. That's what Christianity is today. It's Roman religion. Yeah, it's Roman religion. The dates, all the dates are Roman. A lot of things are Roman. And he just infused it with some Catholic Christian beliefs. Well, Ibn Taymiyyah says that they have the largest following, but always short-lived. That these people will ultimately come to the scholars and they have to rectify everything. Okay, so we will not succeed in the religion of Allah except in the way that Allah told us to do it. Even if it looks very little now, right? But it will last. Allah says, right? مَا عِنْدَكُمْ يَنْفَدْ وَمَا عِنْدَ اللَّهِ بَاقٍ. The deeds, the things that you think are good, will go away. You're going to be lost. وَمَا عِنْدَ اللَّهِ بَاقٍ. And what is with Allah Azza wa Jal is lasting. So even if it's little. And he says, قُلْ جَاءَ الْحَقِّ وَزَهَقَ الْبَاطِلِ. Whenever the truth comes, the batil just goes away. So when we do da'wah, we must work vigorously to do it the way the Prophet would have done it. Okay? Even if that means it seems my returns will be very little. That's what it seems like, right? My returns will be very little. But you don't know that little bit can go a long way. Okay? That little bit can go a long way. إن أردت ورود المواهب عليك صحح الفقرة والفاقة لديك إنما الصدقات للفقراء. If you want gifts to come your way, then perfect the spiritual poverty that you have. If you want gifts to come your way, you must make yourself impoverished to Allah. Which means what? Monitor the times in which you are in need. What was your state like? What is your state when you're in need? Now when you're not in need, simulate it. We have a concept of simulation. A pilot, when he's trained, they don't train him on a real plane right away. They'll put him, or it's too expensive. They put him in a simulated room. So it doesn't cost the company or the school money. The military, you think they're sending a guy up there every single time? No. They're putting him in a room, a little place, very expensive, and it's a simulated flight. So a missile will be coming and he has to dodge it. Or they'll spin the plane with him and see if he vomits. Can he withstand it or not? They'll simulate everything. Astronauts, when they go into space, how do they practice? They simulate the environment. Okay. The path of the awliya is, if you are in peacetime, how do you advance? By simulating your times of trial in your head. Simulate it. And this is how you practice. When you practice, you got to practice a game. No team just practices doing drills all day. You don't do drills all day. You play a real game, right? You have a real game, okay, with a real opponent. Simulated a friendly, right? So you simulate the environment, okay? You simulate the environment. And once you're in peacetime, you got to keep simulating it and pretending and making yourself think, tricking yourself into that you are in a complete need. Okay? You act like that. This is how you advance in peacetime. Then when the test comes, you will be, in fact, right, ready to be like that. An example. Someone will contemplate that he is khalas. The doctors told him you have 6 months to live. You contemplate, what am I state going to be like now? What am I going to be like now? You contemplate that. What if a doctor told me I have 6 months to live? What if this nice home that I'm in, something happens and I'm kicked out? I'm in a little apartment. You got to visualize that. What would life be like, right? Or what would happen? Yeah, and you don't want to think bad things. You don't want to think like, oh, what if my kid dies? You don't want to think like that. But you have to put yourself in the shoes of people who suffer that, right? How would your ibadah be? How would your salah be like if your child was suffering a calamity, right? You have to simulate that without going crazy, going over the top with that, right? And becoming paranoid or insane, okay? You must simulate such a trial. Then you'll be ready for it when it happens, okay? That is fikr. That's your daily fikr. That's fikr, okay? So as they say, you hope for the best, but you prepare for the worst. How do you prepare for the worst? You got to simulate it in your head. But your simulation will never be the real thing. Your simulation of a matter will never be the real thing. It won't even come close. But you will have an idea of how it's like. Like for example, Allah tells us there's pomegranates in paradise. There's rivers in paradise. There's velvet couches in paradise. So you have an image in your head. But we all know that's not even close to the real thing. Because I always thought, there's a couch, and beneath the couch is running a river. That means, where is the foot of the couch? Is it on soil? That means it's getting dirty, right? So you can't imagine it, but you can get an idea of what it's like, right? You can get an idea, a river of milk, a river of honey, a river of water, a river of wine, I mean, a pomegranate, or fruits that don't have to be peeled and don't have any seeds inside of them. You can contemplate it, but you know for sure, when you look upon Jannah, it's going to be, yes, they will be there, but not the way you imagined it. Okay? So, this is how we contemplate. And when we do this, okay, we open ourselves to divine gifts. The nafs is the problem. The ego is the problem. Hubbud dunya. How do you remove from yourself hubbud dunya? And this is the thing. If you've experienced it once, you know how it goes. You got to reach back into your most bitter experiences, being rejected. Of course, being rejected is one of the most bitter experiences. Okay? One of the most bitter experiences. Being tested with your kids is worse than being tested with yourself. Right? All of these things. And this is why the Prophet ﷺ said, I do not like my Sahaba. He said to the Sahaba, I do not like for you to look at those whose dunya is good. Rather, look at those whose dunya is bad. And I realized recently, being in the company of old people, Muslim or not Muslim, has a benefit. Now our deen always tells us, honor the old, visit the old, right? Respect the elderly, don't put them in a home. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, إِمَّا يَبْلُغَنَّ عِنْدَكَ الْكِبَرِ أَحَدُهُمَا أَوْ كِلَاهُمَا. If your parents reach old age with you, that means before they get old age, you should be bringing them over a lot so that he gets into decrepitude in your own home. Of course, nowadays, people like their freedom and even many parents won't even accept to be with their kids, right? But Allah is telling us, that's how close you should be to old people. They should be with you. Why is that? The old person, when you sit with him, he has lost love of dunya. The dunya has come and gone. He knows it's gone. They have no interest in dunya. If you spend a lot of time with elderly people, just sitting with them, talking about whatever they want to talk about, you will find yourself in a zone in which you don't care for the dunya anymore. It rubs off on you, I'm telling you, even if he's a kafir, right? It rubs off on you, because dunya is khalas, gone. It's gone. He has no hope for it anymore. And not only that, what's the difference between someone who actually lost his dunya and an old person? There's a big difference. The old person, his reflection on the dunya is a view of someone who not only he doesn't have dunya anymore, he's witnessed others replace him in the dunya, right? There's a big difference. It's a much different feeling when you've been replaced. When you're so old that you're forgotten and replaced. So you can go and you be poor for 6 months and simulate poverty for yourself, and now I have no dunya, and I'm, you know, being poor. But you know in the back of your head, you still have a chance. And you still could do it. It's a much more different feeling than when you've been replaced. I've been with du'at, scholars. And scholars have dunya. The dunya of a scholar is just different. The same temptations that scholar has. Okay? He has they have the same, their own temptations, their own issues. Okay? But I sat with one man one time who was replaced. And you could tell the sadness in his eyes, right? That he was the man at some point. But that's his dunya. And if he didn't come, but now he's sad. He's sad now. Some of them get bitter, which means that his intention wasn't right in the first place. And hopefully that bitterness will be his kafara. But some of them will get sad. That means his intention was mixed. He did it for Allah, but he also loved it. He loved the attention. Others, it's as if nothing happened. Right? He doesn't care at all. Okay? But this is the thing. Being replaced is a different feeling. So you need to know what's your life going to be like when you're replaced? You got to have a spiritual life. You have to build up the spiritual life so that when you're replaced, you shouldn't care. And this is the whole realm of tasawuf is like this. The whole purpose of tasawuf is when you're replaced and no one's thinking about you, and you were, as Sayyidina Maryam said, nasyan mansiya, forgotten, and they forgot that they forgot about you. This is what nasyan mansiya means. Forgotten, and they even forgot that they forgot about you. Like in New York, in the world of the New York Yankees, Mickey Mantle is no longer a player, but we know he's no longer a player. We remember Mickey Mantle. Of course, he's not on the field, but he's remembered, even though he's replaced. He's replaced, but remembered. There are players that are replaced and forgotten, right? They're replaced and they're forgotten. So, Allah Azza wa Jal only gives to that person whose heart is empty and broken. So make your heart empty and broken, even if you have to simulate that tribulation comes to you. But do not let other people see your state. Don't come and let them come in and see you in that state. Do this privately. Why? Because it might have an adverse effect on others. Yani, imagine if you come home and yani, your spouse is starting to take the tasawuf class and you're coming home and there's bawling in the kitchen. Well, the world's gone into you. Stop going to this class, right? Or the guy, he's sitting there rolling around in the bathroom, right? Imagining that he's lost everything. Oh, right? We don't need this, right? I need you to be happy, right? You're supposed to make others happy. You're not supposed to make me depressed. Why? You may be doing that. The other person may not be in the mood for that. Do this stuff privately. Keep it private, right? This is between you and Allah. One time, they opened the door on Habib Umar bin Hafiz, and they found him in such a state, on the ground, laying on the ground, weeping, okay? But they weren't supposed to see him like that. You're never going to see him like that. That was an accident that happened, right? That's something you do privately between yourself and Allah. Okay. The next hikmah says, قَتُكَ, your poverty, لَكَ ذَاتِيَةٌ, it belongs to you, essentially. See again, it's you. Don't let share this with others. This is private for you. فَقَتُكَ لَكَ ذَاتِيَةٌ وَوُرُودُ الْأَسْبَابِ مُذَكِّرَاتٌ لَكَ بِمَا خَفِيَ عَلَيْكَ مِنْهَا. Now, your private brokenness and spirituality, now when the tribulation comes, it perfects it. It makes it real. Athletes simulate it all the time in practice. Now game time, this is the real thing. It perfects it now. What I was missing in my simulated tribulation, I realize it now, right? So like we said, when we simulate these things, these states, we're going to do good, but we're not going to do the real thing until the real tribulation happens, okay? So when he says your indigence belongs to you, essentially that means the indigence, the poverty that you simulate on yourself, it's not going to be 100% right. But when the real test comes, it's going to perfect your poverty. It's going to perfect it. Okay, it's a reminder of what you missed in your poverty. So, a team is practicing. They're practicing very well. Now game time, and you lost. What does it show? It just shows me that there are certain things missing. you fix it. Okay? And this is how the wali never thinks of his troubles. He only thinks of how his troubles improve his deen. How his troubles improve his spiritual state. Okay? تعرف إلى الله في الرخاء يعرفك في الشدة. Allah's Prophet said, get to know Allah in the good times, He will know you in the bad times. Okay? Get to know Allah in the good times, He'll know you in the bad times, which means, yani, continue these simulations. Strive in the good times, that when the bad time comes, you will find yourself very close to Allah. Very close to Allah. This is the fikr, the huzn that Hassan al-Basri, I believe it was, or maybe it was, one of the ulama said, huzn is bad and good. There's good sadness and there's bad sadness. What's the good sadness? The fikr and the sadness you simulate on yourself. When you visualize and imagine everything has crumbled and been destroyed and you're left with nothing. You've done that to yourself, this is the good sadness. All right, what's better sadness? When it really happens, when the tribulation truly comes. What's bad sadness? Sadness at the loss of dunya, right? When you're sad that something of the dunya was lost, this is embarrassment. One time I was sitting with Sheikh Babikr and a man came in full of drama, right? This man was a very famous, influential Muslim man that you all know, okay? Full of drama. Oh, I can't believe this is happening. What's going to happen? And, right? Sheikh Babikr is sitting there. He's looking at us. He's like laughing almost, right? He said, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. And then he taught us a lesson, and he said, it's an embarrassment when you're worried about your dunya to this degree. This is an embarrassment, right? A man, he can be so big when he reveals his emotions for dunya are like this. In my sight, he's this big. He's this small. And he only told us that, not of backbiting, but warning us, showing us an example of a guy people chase after, flipping out over some dunya, right? And he's saying us, look, see this? When the test came, this is how he reacted. Because he wasn't a man of tasawwuf, right? Or he was just learning. When the tribulation comes to us, you should focus on how it is improving your deen. All right? Let's stop here for our break.